This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Closing credits for me today on Movies on the Radio. Today is my last time joining film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys to talk about your movie picks. So we're going to do something special today. You have called in with your guesses to the question, what is Frank's favorite film? Some great options here. Some I wouldn't watch if you glued my eyeballs open, but I understand what you were thinking, so thank you. And let us now reflect on this show to see what we got. Marcia is the film professor at North Carolina, not the, but one of the many excellent film professors at North Carolina State University and a public scholar at the National Endowment for the Humanities. Laura is film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and curator of the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Welcome. So good to see you. Because I can
Thanks,
see
Frank. It. Good to see you, too. But if we don't say hello, does that mean that you're not able to say goodbye?
Oh, there we go. This is tough, but we have created something, I think, wonderful here. And whenever that happens, well, like when my children grow up and leave the house, I just feel like kind of an excitement about it because I know if they're leaving, I must have done the right thing. And we created a good thing here. But I want to hear your impressions. You know, we started this series December of 2013. And
yeah.
It's been going strong ever since. I don't know. Some reflections. Marcia, what do you think?
Well, I have loved doing this show. It has been a monthly highlight for me, I guess, for 7 years almost, which is hard to believe. And my favorite part of it was from the start that we thought of this as a crowdsourcing project where the listeners would share their picks and their thoughts. And I think that's just been so successful. I have learned so much from the listeners. I have heard of movies I've never heard of, and then I've gotten a chance to see them. So it's inspired me to watch. I mean, I tend to get stuck in 1950s and prior for a lot of my movie watching, except for documentaries. And so this has really encouraged me to see a lot more. And so I'm grateful to everyone who has made a suggestion and called in. And it's been, you know, a real pleasure.
The ultimate conversation when everybody learns. That's fantastic. Laura, how about you?
Well, I agree 100% with Marcia that every single show, pretty much, I've come away with some movie that I had to watch or rewatch. You know, one example is The Best of 2019, somebody had a documentary called We Are the Radical Monarchs that I looked up and tried to find, and there was nowhere to watch it. But then it was on UNC TV. It was on POV, so I could watch it. And it was a wonderful movie, and now I follow the Radical Monarchs on Instagram, and so it really expanded my worldview, you know, to experience that movie with the listener.
Well, I remember the genesis of this, which was when the two of you were on the show for something else. There was a movie showing at one of your places, and I don't remember what it was, but we just put you together because you were, you know, you should be talking about this. And the whole staff came away saying, they have to be on the radio all the time. What do we do to make them on the radio all the time? And then we came up with this, and we brought you in a room. And I remember the looks on your faces when we all said, well, we could do this, and then we could have, yeah, and let's have listeners call in. And it all came together pretty quickly. And then they looked at me and said, what kind of movies do you like, Frank? And I said, oh, I hate movies. It was so great to see the looks on your faces. I think it was you, Marcia, who said, well, how's this going to work? But it did because I like talking about them. And also, I do all the clips, so then I get really kind of into the movie when I put it together. So
I think your whole I hate movies thing is an adorable posture from someone who has a lot of great interests and who can find the best of even things that are not your favorite.
Oh.
And that's part of life, right? As being interesting and open to new experiences and to thinking about things that you may not ordinarily have.
And again, along the lines of the listeners, they have been so smart on this and just pointing out things that I'd never considered before and picking movies I never would have expected, given the topic. It's been a real joy dealing with and listening to what listeners thought. So then we said, well, what do you think would be Frank's favorite movie? Since he has announced a couple times on the show, he doesn't watch many. And why don't we dig right in and hear what some listeners have to say. Some were close. I mean, I don't really have a favorite, and this one would rank among them.
My name is David Seidenberg, and I'm from Carrboro, North Carolina. The film that I chose was Airplane, which is a film about flight in which many of the passengers and all of the flight crew get food poisoning, and an ex-fighter pilot is called on to fly and land the plane. It is juvenile, and it's silly, and it's a bit raunchy, but there are so many quotable lines and slapstick gags.
This is due to periodic air pockets we encountered. There's no reason to become alarmed, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your flight. By the way, is there anyone on board who knows how to fly a plane?
Oh, stewardess, I speak Jive.
What is it, Doctor? What's going on?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen anything like this since the Anita Bryant concert.
I want to know absolutely everything that's happened up to now. Well, let's see. First, the Earth cooled, and then the dinosaurs came. But they got too big and fat, so they all died, and they turned into oil. And then the Arabs came, and they bought Mercedes-Benzes. And Prince Charles started wearing all of Lady Di's clothes. I couldn't believe it. He took her best summer dress out of the closet, and he put it on and went to...
Joey, have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
Most of the time when I see it with other people, they tell me to shut up because I keep reciting the lines. And the reason why I put it as a possibility for Frank, he's probably about my generation, and I Googled him. It says he's from New York, and I'm from New York, so I figured I'm going to go with that.
Good guess, David. I do love that movie for all those reasons. It's the silliest movie in the world, but also it kind of takes, you know, it takes on the form of the adventure movie.
Well, I think also what this listener very astutely picked up on is your sense of humor, Frank, which is something. So having done this show for 7 years, where once a month, usually we're in the same room together until COVID, we have gotten the privilege to see what a ham you are both before and during the show. And so clearly that has been intuited by your listeners who don't have the privilege of getting to see it face to face.
Well, my goal for every episode of this show is just to make Frank laugh. So if I've succeeded at that, then I feel like it's been a good
you do,
show.
And I love it. And you do once a month that happens. The other story I'll tell about this, I saw this in the theater with my wife, and there was a 12-year-old and a 6-year-old, or like a 7-year-old. They were in front of us. The film broke. So the lights are on. We're waiting for the film. The 12-year-old begins entertaining the 6-year-old by blowing on his arm and making that sound. I'm watching Airplane. I'm laughing hysterically. My wife is embarrassed that I'm laughing at this film. Now the kid's blowing on his arm, making that rude noise. I can't stop laughing. I can't even breathe. So that gives you a sense of my sense of humor. Now you know. And there's more picks. Let's go.
My name is Penny Paskoff. I live in Durham. And I think Frank's favorite movie is The Princess Bride. It's funny. It's witty. It's charming. And those are all the things that Frank Statio is when I listen to his conversations with other people. The scene that popped into my mind was the picnic scene where he's talking to the little ball guy who's trying to poison him.
The battle of wits has begun. It ends when you decide and we both drink and find out who is right and who is dead.
But it's so simple. All I have to do is divine from what I know of you. Are you the sort of man who would put the poison into his own goblet or his enemies? Now, a clever man would put the poison into his own goblet because he would know that only a great fool would reach for what he was given. I'm not a great fool, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you. But you must have known I was not a great fool. You would have counted on it, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of me.
You've made your decision then?
Not remotely. Because Iocane comes from Australia, as everyone knows. And Australia is entirely peopled with criminals. And criminals are used to having people not trust them, as you are not trusted by me, so I can clearly not choose the wine in front of you.
Truly, you have a dizzying intellect.
Wait till I get going.
Penny Pascoe choosing The Princess Bride. I do love that film as well.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And you are not the only one. You know, I was thinking about this, which is, you know, having now done, we've done around 80 of these shows, right? And so every month we kind of see a list of all of the suggestions from listeners for their picks. And then we see what ultimately is picked by the producers for the show. I would say if we did a little analysis of those recommendations, I think Princess Bride may have come up as a pick more than any other film. I think we've talked about it on the show at least 3 times, mm-hmm. and we have not talked about it on the show, I would say, a lot of other times. So this is a film that people love. And so, again, a good tribute to you, Frank.
It is charming and it's lovely. And it does sort of take off on the form itself.
Jim Carl at the Carolina says that he could program this film every night and sell out the theater, you know, one night after another, because it is so beloved.
Well, here's a good film that would not sell out the theater every night, but it's a terrific film anyway.
Hi, this is Gordon Allen from Chapel Hill. And I had guessed that Frank's favorite movie would be The Seventh Samurai. And I guess that because he would be aware of the film, and I think it's the greatest film ever made. And Frank, being as savvy as he is, would feel that. I first saw the movie in the 70s in Boston when I was in college. My girlfriend dragged me to a series of Japanese films, and I thought they were different. They were interesting. And it was such a wonderful movie.
And I've heard great things about it, Gordon. I have not seen it, but I get the feeling from all that I've heard, I probably would love it if I take the time to see it.
Well, the big disadvantage for you, Frank, is that it's extremely long. And I know that you have a problem with sitting still for extended periods of time.
I do. I don't. I just can't sit. But you could watch it on YouTube.
Or you can watch it in installments, perhaps.
Well, what I think you would like about it, though, is this idea of having a lot of different perspectives. I mean, that's what I thought. So it's kind of interesting. The caller didn't mention that, but this is what it's about, having different ways of looking at an event. And that's, after all, what you've been doing on the air for all these years.
Well, now I've got months and months and years to sit and stand up and watch. And I'll do that. More of Frank's picks or your choice about what Frank's favorite movie is with Marcia Gordon, Laura Boys, Movies on the Radio, on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. It's Movies on the Radio, my last time hosting that segment on our show. Today, we're live with film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys to present a little game we call What's Frank's Favorite Film? We heard from we do that every month. Let's see. Well, listeners who cast their bets for the films they think I like for good reasons or their own reasons, all a celebration of my last occasion to host this series with my wonderful guest. What a series it's been. Marcia Gordon, film professor at NC State, public scholar at the National Endowment for the Humanities. Laura is film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and curator of the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater in Durham. Let's get right to it now and go to another pick.
Hi, my name is Linda Maloof, and I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. My choice for Frank's favorite film is It's a Wonderful Life, starring the great James Stewart. And I imagine Frank would pick an old classic film. And this film is really, this one's very complex. It has light and dark moments. There's drama, there's a little comedy, but it does have a happy ending. And I imagine Frank would like happy endings. So he probably would find the character of George Bailey, who is the film's classic hero, a very fascinating study. And I think he would make a perfect guest on the State of Things.
George Bailey, that communist. Linda Maloof is cheating, of course, because Linda and I are good friends. You know Linda, Laura, very well, yeah. And good friends with the late Nick Meglin, who also, they were both incredulous about my disdain for films. And so, but she knew that I love that film. I will say this.
If I were casting the Frank Stasio biopic, I would pick Jimmy Stewart to play you. Yeah. So just so you know, this is true, not in jest.
I love him in that role. I think I love the role. I love the film. It's really a terrific film.
One of the things that's so interesting is that was the first film that he made after he came back from his World War II service, and he felt like he could no longer embody the kind of optimism of the American dream once he'd seen the war, so that it has a very bitter undertone that is surprising for a heartwarming Christmas film.
But what's lovely, I guess, about the film is the gentle way it brings and juxtaposes the values and virtues that are held dear to America and how easily they go wrong. I'm going to play this clip from this scene, and we'll talk about it in a minute, about sort of, he's got his heart in the right place, and then, oh no, this is the transactional, commodified America he's talking about. Let's listen.
Mary, I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust of this crummy little town off my feet and I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parthenon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here and go to college and see what they know. And then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long. What, are you going to throw a rock? Hey, that's pretty good. What'd you wish, Mary?
Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight?
Dance by the light of the moon. What'd you wish when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Come on, tell me.
If I told you, it might not come true.
What is it you want, Mary? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
Clip from the 1946 classic film, It's a Wonderful Life. I do love it, and it is among the top films in my, among my preferences. Yeah, because here's a man full of love, full of aspiration, full of energy. And how does he see that energy? I've got to leave my home. I have to leave the people I love. It's the moon. It's the thing out there. It's what I can build and create apart from me, right? Transactions. And then there's the love of his life, who really sees the heart of the thing, which is their connection. And she's very, she's being coy about how the connection is much more important to him, which will prove out by the end of the film. These things are the tension in the whole, and I think it's beautifully done.
Agree. And I mean, Frank Capra, the director of this film, I think one of the most interesting of Hollywood's directors in this period, just had such reach with this film and the way it's been recycled and replayed over the years. So this is a film that so many people, like The Wizard of Oz, which we've talked about on the show a bunch of times, have seen. And it's a thought-provoking film. It's not a simplistic Christmas movie at all.
Right. But not something people wanted to think about when it came out, right? Didn't do well in 1946.
Right.
But then what happened was it fell into the public domain because it was done as an independent production. So TV stations could show it for free, which they did. And that's how it became a Christmas classic.
So a lot of folks figure because you do a talk show and a lot of politics and public policy come up and media is all part of this, that, public policy and talk and broadcasting would be an important part of my film collection.
So my name is Ben Williams. I'm from Chapel Hill. And my pick for Frank's favorite movie is Network. It's my favorite movie, which of course makes me want everybody else to like it. But I can see Frank liking it because it has a particularly interesting take on media news gathering and on the sort of move to greater sensationalism. And I think it is a very interesting movie about social introspection and about cultural anger and how that can surface.
We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
There you go, from the film Network. It's a great film, and it was a film that talked about a very important subject at the time, kind of what's our media giving us and why are we paying attention to this nonsense when there are such important things going on. It's almost like we couldn't have quite that conversation now, in a way, that's passed.
Well,
that legacy media is covering the wrong things because we're all on Twitter being our own media.
Well, that's right. I mean, I actually just watched a really interesting documentary called The Meaning of Hitler that is about the meaning of Hitler and about the rise of fascism. And it talked about Hitler's reliance on the new media of the radio to reach people in such a kind of comprehensive way. And this is about network is about television, and now it's Twitter, right? I mean, the way that media has evolved over time and the reach of that has everything to do with how politics, nations, anger, all of these things that we're witnessing right now.
Yeah. Well, it's the politics of distraction,
right,
which is right. What Howard Beale is raging against, and that's become even more intense. I mean, what has the last 4 years not been, right, except I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore?
Well, I'm mad as hell I'm going to tweet about it. And so that, and I think tweet's the perfect word. Tweet is not rage. Tweet is not a yell. Tweet is a tweet. And so that's how much that it's kind of shrunk in a way. This film was a harbinger of something like that, but it took it on fairly squarely. Actually, the film that I liked even more that talked about media in general being, you know, an absolute wasteland, as Newt Minow said, was Groove Tube. Remember that one?
And that's the way it is, was, and will be. And this is Robert Elgin for Channel One News, hoping that your news is good news. Good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow. No matter what the news may be, this time or any time, until next time, have a good time all the time.
And that theme goes on for another minute and a half. The whole film, I don't know if you saw this film, 1974, Chevy Chase, by the way, was featured in this film. And it's utterly juvenile. Utterly juvenile, but it was a way of saying that the whole thing is pure nonsense.
I have never seen this film, but in appreciation of you, I am going to see it, and I'm going to do a film report for you.
You're going to love it.
My homework.
Here's another good guess.
My name is Jacob Downing. I'm in Raleigh, North Carolina, and I was calling in to say that I hope one of Frank's favorite movies that maybe influenced him a little bit would be To Kill a Mockingbird, 1962 movie directed by Robert Mulligan. A lot of that movie is the film is having a conversation with the audience about what the concepts of justice are. I like how the movie kind of starts out by showcasing what the town is like and a little bit of an introduction to the South, and you get to meet a lot of different characters before coming up to a very heavy topic that the rational conversation has given folks the emotional support they need to have those conversations.
Jacob Downey telling us why he thinks To Kill a Mockingbird would be my favorite film, and that would be a good guess, wouldn't you say?
I think that it's such a thoughtful guess, and I really appreciate the reasons for that. It does not surprise me that that is someone's guess based upon the show. And I would say To Kill a Mockingbird, so different than Princess Bride, but another film that if I were doing a list of the films that I think people have wanted to talk about the most, that is one of them.
Frank also is not afraid to discuss these uncomfortable subjects with people on the air, and bring people to another level of understanding about things. That's part of his gift in being able to talk to everyone.
Well, certainly there's the obvious theme in the film, and I appreciate that. Thank you for saying that. But the pain of discrimination and the way that it plays out in places like the setting for To Kill a Mockingbird. But there was a deeper theme in that I think came out of the movie quite well, and that maybe not even as well in the novel. This theme of mass mob violence and the ways in which mob mentalities can be created and also dissipated. Let's listen to this scene.
Hey, Mr. Cunningham. I said, hey, Mr. Cunningham. Don't you remember me, Mr. Cunningham? I'm Jean Louise Finch. You brought us some hickory nuts one early morning, remember? We had a talk. I go to school with your boy. I go to school with Walter. He's a nice boy. Tell him hey for me, won't you? What's the matter? I sure meant no harm, Mr. Cunningham.
No harm taken, young lady. I'll tell Walter you said hey. Let's clear out of here.
1962 film To Kill a Mockingbird. The mob shows up. The scene is shot from behind with just the heads of the potential lynch mob as they assemble at the jail from behind. And then all of a sudden, Scout calls out Mr. Cunningham. And he's no longer, there's no longer a mob. There's an individual, one person now responsible. And it actually reminds me, you know, I was raised Catholic, so I've heard the story of the woman caught in adultery many times, and it's often taught as a lesson to not accuse other people because, after all, you're not perfect. But there's a very important line in there that says, let he who is sinful cast the first stone. And by casting the first stone, you would stand out. You wouldn't be a mob anymore. And that's the first thing that came to mind when I saw that scene. Suddenly, you're asked to cast the first stone, and you're Mr. Cunningham. You're not a mob. And I thought that was part of the brilliance of the film, to be honest, to talk about that as a deeper theme. We got lots to talk about today, too. Many other guesses, crazy ones, things I've never seen before, and now I'm going to have to watch.
Hi, my name is John Brennan. I'm in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And my guess is that Frank's favorite film is Pirate Radio. Now, Pirate Radio isn't much. A large cast, lots of drinking and smoking and easy sex, a pretty standard caricature of the 1960s. All that hung on the framework that the BBC preferred classical music and tried to suppress pop music. I selected it as Frank's secret favorite movie, as it's a movie about pirate radio.
It was loud, it was rebellious, and in 1966, the British government banned rock and roll on the radio. Until one American DJ...
I don't give a hoot and nanny about your limey logs.
He's possibly the most famous broadcaster ever.
And a band of renegades...
You must be the Count!
I am he.
Take me to the microphone!
...launched a radio station on the high seas...
We should have set sail years ago.
...and raided the airwaves.
Let's have a tune. I'm sick of this silence.
I'm the Count. You're listening to Radio...
So Frank's retiring. But can he walk away from radio? He's been doing it forever. Rumor has it that he was hanging with Marconi when radio started. So, is he going to go commercial? Unlikely. Be his own boss? Well, why not? So I envision him starting a private radio station pirate, floating on Lake Jordan. He would explore an old interest in religion and provide radio theater broadcasts to fill the void left by live theater that is now gone for the foreseeable future. Peace out.
That's a great guess, at least about the future. I've been doing pirate radio for 15 years right here. And occasionally, people actually notice what I'm trying to do.
Wow, that is not just, that's an incredible pick, but it is also, I think, a fairly accurate prediction of what will happen in the future.
That's it.
And I think I see this happening. In
yeah,
point of fact.
Floating on the radio. I think we can get two more in here, so let's try this. Let's listen to one more.
Hi, this is Sandra Page. I'm in Chapel Hill. And my guess is for Frank's favorite movie is The Last Picture Show. It kind of reminds me of maybe the fact that he was coming of age and this was a coming of age movie. I don't know Frank's age, but I'm guessing that this might have been something that was being released around the time that he was also making decisions in his life. But I have a second guess. And my second guess is that his favorite movie would be one of Ken Burns' productions. The one I'm going to say is The Civil War. But truly, I think Frank and Ken Burns share many of the same qualities of storytelling and letting us follow along in a peaceful way through the story of jazz or the story of baseball or the story of the Civil War. So my second guess would be any of Ken Burns' movies.
Last Picture Show or Ken Burns, and I appreciate the thought and the thought that went into it. I didn't see Last Picture Show. I don't know. That was a time in my life when I really wasn't going to movies. So she's right about that. Coming of age was the thing I did, and I wasn't watching movies because I was actually coming of age. So I didn't see that. Ken Burns, I appreciate the thought. I have to say, I find the form, I can't sit, and I find the form a little repetitive. And I have a hard time sitting through them because I say, here comes the photomation, here comes the voiceover, here comes the music. And I appreciate what he does. Great storyteller, great stories. America loves him, and I'm so happy for that. That's what I'll say about
all
of
them. Do you want the Ken Burns Civil War clip notes 10-minute version.
Well, I know who won. That's the main thing. One more.
I'm Skip Alzheimer, calling from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I've been on the State of Things a couple of times, and so I think I know Frank pretty well. My choice for his favorite movie is 1977's Smokey and the Bandit.
I just picked up the Bandit eastbound on 95. All units converge.
I copy, Chopper One. I'm on my way.
Which is surprising, you would think. Frank doesn't seem like he's that type of guy, but it was such a popular film when it came out. And just the cast of Burt Reynolds, Sally Field, Jackie Gleason, was just a wonderful ensemble. And the humor is great, and the stunts are great, and I think Frank has a weakness for car chases.
Car 12, Bobby Lee, and I have it westbound on 75.
Skip. Funny.
Best
Funny.
Guess. That is the best guess. Plus, you look a little like Burt Reynolds in this movie. Come on. It's the same mustache.
It is the same mustache, yes. And I love just driving fast.
Love beer.
I like beer. Yeah, and I thought Sally Field was great. So I guess maybe part of that is all true. Marsha Gordon, Laura Boys, the movies on the radio, Frank's picks. Oh, the big reveal. So now we find out what truly is Frank's favorite film. And we'll talk about it, and we'll explain why in just a moment. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow, and today marks my last day hosting Movies on the Radio. So we asked you to try to guess my favorite film. And from Airplane to Pirate Radio to The Princess Bride, you delivered. So now we've reached the moment of the great reveal. I'm here with film experts Marsha Gordon and Laura Boys. Marsha, film professor at NC State University, public scholar at the National Endowment for the Humanities. And Laura is film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and curator of the Movie Diva series at the Carolina Theater in Durham. So that's quite, yeah, and we should say, in a lot of ways, Marsha and Laura, this is in some ways that you're prompting. You have been wanting me to talk about this film for a long time, right?
Yeah. And begging. I proposed, I think, doing a whole show about it.
Yeah.
But we got a third of a show.
We got a third of a show.
We kind of are.
We kind of a show. So without further ado, drum roll, please.
Well, I'll tell you the truth now. I ain't a for real cowboy, but I am one hell of a stud.
A very expensive stud. And I happen to be his manager.
Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear a word they're saying. Only the echoes of my mind.
Midnight Cowboy, among my favorites. But I love this film. I love this film. And so the story is that I saw this film 47 times. But that's because I was an usher at Lowe's Buffalo Theater. I got to stand up the whole time. Perhaps if I had to sit in my seat, I would not have. I've not watched it, but there's plenty of popcorn to work on. And so 42 times, and I was like 17 years old. I was in high school at the time. By the eighth time, I knew every line and was entertaining everybody in the cafeteria with my renditions of Joe Buck and Enrico Salvatore Rizzo. I found the film absolutely mesmerizing from the start, and we can talk more about it. It's a love film. And, you know, what's not apparent in the film, and it is in the novel, is that it's a romantic love film. There's homoerotic love expressed in the novel in ways that are not. Joe Buck is a Texan who goes to New York to enter the sex industry. He thinks he's going to be a stud, a gigolo. He ends up working on the streets, working with men, but that's purely transactional. It's all business, and that's clear in the film. And then is taken up, then Enrico Salvatore Rizzo is kind of a hustler without a lot of money. He's living in a squat. The two of them live together, and Rico becomes his manager, known in the film as Ratso. But I will tell you, about the third time I saw this film, I swore I would never call him Ratso from that moment forward. I'll tell you. It was to me, and I didn't know anything about the novel, so I only saw the relationship between these two men, which did not have an erotic component between the two of them, though, you know, perhaps suggested now and then. It's a love movie, and the love movie, it was about love, and it was about two men, and it was about the deepest form of love, the kind of love that forms in through grief and not through the hearts and flowers of Hollywood at the time. And I was just utterly mesmerized by it. So that's me. But now, we've talked about this film and laughed about it because I've done renditions. I never really asked you if you liked it. Do you like it?
So I am a real admirer of this film, and I'm grateful for the chance to have rewatched it last week after not having seen it in so long. You know, it came out in 1969, directed by the British director John Schlesinger as part of his American career, and starring John Voight and Dustin Hoffman in both incredible performances. And I agree. I think the friendship in this film between them, I mean, it starts off with, the Dustin Hoffman's character trying to take advantage of John Voight's really naive character. He has no idea what he's doing or how to make his studly transactions in the big city. And it ends up being just incredibly tender and tragic friendship. I think of that scene where Rico is making the soup and Joe Buck is like, you know, what is this? But then he doesn't, he's trying to nourish him and take care of him, and the jacket transaction and the clothes on the bus. I mean, there's just all of these exchanges between them that are within, you know, kind of at the borders of what Hollywood would have permitted, even though this film did get an X rating at the time, are on the borders of what Hollywood would have permitted, I think, in such a mainstream film. And so even though it's very sad and very dark, I think it's a really excellent film.
Laura?
And so I had not seen Midnight Cowboy until last week, and I really hated it because it's about trauma, it's about degradation. It's extremely misogynistic. It's very homophobic with a weird homoerotic vibe on top of it. There are so many scenes that you have to look away from because Joe Buck becomes so debased as he goes through, you know, the arc of his sex work, which becomes, you know, more and more gross. You know, any fantasies that you ever had about going to one of Andy Warhol's parties, you know, are completely exploded, you know, with how horrible that is. And as I'm in recovery from watching this film, you know, I can appreciate the friendship between the two men has a real tenderness, even though, I mean, I love overacting. Dustin Hoffman goes a little over the top for me. I do love the on-location filming in New York, which really evokes a time and a place that's really wonderful. But would I ever recommend anyone to see this film? You know, I would have to say probably not.
The imagery is disturbing. Now, I'll tell you what, I do want to hear this, but I want to get us into the film a little bit more because I think it's been 50 years or so since anybody's seen it, and I don't know how many people saw it. So I want to give us a sense of these characters, too. Joe Buck, who was traumatized in his early life, and I think it's the way this trauma is transmuted through the film that is its beauty. But having to sit through and deal with it and take it on board yourself is the hard part. Watching these two men work through this grief and have it turn into something beautiful is what redeems it. But let's talk about Joe Buck. Early days, brimming with confidence. This handsome is John Voight in his earliest years before his politics got weird. And so here he is. He's going to ski down the streets of New York for the first time, and he is going to score.
Pardon me, ma'am. I'm brand spanking new in this here town. I was hoping to get a look at the Statue of Liberty.
Hoping to get a look at what?
Statue of Liberty.
It's up in Central Park taking a leak. If you hurry up, you'll catch the supper show.
Welcome to New York, Joe. he does, in fact, go up there, but that's a whole different story.
This is a film that has a geographical arc that's worth, I think, just taking a moment to think about, which is, you know, starting off in Texas, where Joe is from, and his traumatic past and his dreams of something better, to truly this, you know, I think, gritty, realistic portrait of what New York was like in the late 1960s. This is not a studio lot-bound film. This is shot in the streets, and it has a smell to it almost. I mean, it's very visceral. And then, you know, with the ending in Florida, which is kind of like this Grapes of Wrath idea of, it's like the California and Grapes of Wrath is Florida for these two characters, and especially for Rico. But But I just want to mention, too, that, you know, you mentioned John Voight's career. You know, Dustin Hoffman, the film he did before this, you know what it was?
The Graduate, right?
It was The Graduate.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the last film, and we dedicated a whole show to that. So imagine going from that role in The Graduate to this role, right, which is, I mean, it's just, it is an impressive kind of testament to Hoffman's kind of range and performance ability, I think.
Well, and the other, yes, and I wanted to talk about just that for this moment, because this movie has so much darkness and so much pain, which was hardly ever reflected, you know, for 90 minutes on a Hollywood film before. They both play it as a comedy. It really does come off as a comedy. And that's the beauty of it. His genius at finding any sort of humor and bringing comedy to this role that just you couldn't imagine is, I think, what makes this film, what keeps it from falling off the edge. I'm going to play a clip here. Joe has just been kicked out of his hotel. He's got no place to stay. Rico invites him to stay with him. Rico is staying in a squat. It's an abandoned building, and they're pushing their way through a 10-foot chain link, a breach in a, you know, 10-foot chain link fence in this debris to get to his squat.
Got my own private entrance here. You're the only one who knows about it. Watch the plank, watch the plank. Break your damn skull. No way to collect insurance. Classic. It's just one more up. All the electric's off. I don't mess with Con Edison. It's another convenience, eh? But the icebox will keep the roaches from getting into perishables.
Which is a line I just used over and over again. Of course, I was 17. I ain't a for real cowboy, but I'm one hell of a stud. That showed up a lot.
Well, it's a movie about self-delusion, right, and those kinds, right, of monologues are all about how Rizzo lives in a completely self-fabricated, right, world.
As does Joe Buck.
Well, and it's also a movie that is completely obsessed with money. And I think, Frank, that must have been one of the things you've always been interested in, the capitalist idea. And this is a film in which these characters, all they talk about and think, and it's based on deprivation and what, right, they don't have and what they're trying to get.
Right. Their denial, their dreams vis-a-vis the American lie, and how that American lie and social order destroys human lives, and how love conquers. And that's, their Eyes Were Watching God was another great novel, Zora Neale Hurston, that does both. It blends these two social milieu with very personal stories. Here's why I say it's a love story. This is the argument that they have, one of the many, in Rico's squat.
Smells worse hot than it did cold.
All right, starting tomorrow, you'll cook your own damn dinner. Well, you get one of your rich Park Avenue ladies to look for you.
I'm eating it. I'm eating it, see?
In her penthouse.
Look, I'm eating this shit, Ratso. Mmm, good.
Miami Beach, that's where you could score. Anybody can score there, even you. In New York, no rich lady with any class at all buys that cowboy crap anymore. They're laughing at you on the street.
Ain't nobody laughing at me on the street.
Behind your back, I seen them laughing at you, fella.
Oh, what the hell do you know about women anyway? When's the last time you scored, boy?
It's a matter, I only talk about a confession. We're not talking about me now.
Well, when's the last time you've been to confession?
It's between me and my confessor. And I'll tell you another thing. Frankly, you're beginning to smell. And for a stud in New York, that's a handicap.
Well, don't talk to me about clean. I ain't never seen you change your underwear once the whole time I've been here in New York. And that's pretty peculiar behavior.
I don't have to do that kind of thing in public. I ain't got no need to expose myself.
No, I bet you don't. I bet you ain't never even been laid. How about that? And you're gonna tell me what appeals to women.
I know enough to know that that great big dumb cowboy crap of yours don't appeal to nobody except every Jackie on 42nd Street.
That's from Midnight Cowboy, and that is a lover's quarrel, if ever I heard one.
Absolutely.
And there's a beautiful moment there, too. What I love about this, and always was just absolutely attracted to, is while they're doing this, Rico's got a coconut, a fresh coconut in his hand, a whole coconut, and he's got a can, one of those old-fashioned can openers that literally, like, pokes a hole in the can, and you zip, zip, zip. And he's trying to penetrate this coconut with this can opener. And he has some kind of deformity and some disability. So you watch this futile effort to kind of crack this shell while he's having this argument with Joe. Utterly beautiful. We're running a little out of time. I've got to get to this scene to kind of bring this thing to a close. Spoiler alert, folks. I still think the film is worth watching. But here's where the film, and I, so 48 times, the last time I saw it was the 48th time, I cried again.
Hey, listen, don't get sore or anything, okay?
I ain't sore.
I don't think I can walk anymore. I mean, I've been falling down a lot. I'm scared.
What are you scared of?
You know what they do to you when they know you can't. When they find out that you can't walk. Oh, Christ. I gotta lay down.
Okay, you're gonna lay down. You're gonna lay down now. Just take it easy.
Come on. I'm gonna
lay it down. Take it easy. Lay it down. There you go. You put this
thing over you. Now you stay here. Where you going?
I gotta get a doctor.
What?
I gotta get a doctor.
You ain't getting me no doctor.
No. You're sick, boy. You need a damn doctor.
Hey, no doctors, no cops. Don't be so stupid.
What the hell you want me to do?
Florida, you got me to Florida.
Oh, hell, I can't go to Florida now.
Just put me on a bus. Just put me on a bus. I don't need you.
You got the damn fever. Well, how the hell are you going to get to Florida?
Just get me on a bus. You ain't sending me to Bellevue. All right, what are you doing? What are you doing that for? It's hot.
Sick.
No.
Sick. Keep it on.
Too hot now. Dumb. Boy, you're really dumb. I don't need you. Dumb.
Oh, shut up, shut up. Just shut up.
Dumb cowboy, boy.
Damn it. Just when things going right for me, you
got to
pull a damn stunt like this.
So he does. He takes him to Florida, and it's quite a sacrifice that he has to make to do that. It's a violent ending to get the money to go to Florida, and then, spoiler alert, Rico doesn't make it, and he's on the bus. And I will say, I know this is a sad moment for everyone. You can see it coming. I think you can see it coming in the film. But I will call that a happy ending. I would say the expression on his face is peace. I think it's the kind of peace that comes from only true love, and I was utterly moved by the movie.
Well, and it's also so much about this, Joe Buck making his dream come true. Right. I mean, that, it doesn't matter in some way that he doesn't get to experience the after of that. It's that kind of devotion that he will do everything he can to make that come true.
Indeed.
So it's the one time he's done something for another person that's really meaningful for him.
They both did. They're both sacrificing and becoming one through this film, and it was utterly beautiful. And in the theater, what happens is the whole thing is dark, 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 and then they on the bus to Florida, and in the theater, like, you know, your pupils dilate, right? I mean, you're constrict because the lights are up in the theater. So that's going on. Running out of time. Marcia, you've got an event coming up. Let's talk about that.
I do. So, I published this book, co-edited collection with Duke University Press called Screening Race, an American Non-Theatrical Film. And this Friday at 8:30 Eastern Time, we're doing a streaming event through the University of Chicago. Me and my colleagues, Allison Nadia Field and Jacqueline Stewart, who is the newly appointed chief artistic programmer of the Academy of Motion Pictures, are doing a wonderful program of non-theatrical films, home movies, et cetera, that are Chicago-themed. So join us.
Link in our website, stateofthings.org. What a pleasure to work with you. Been great.
Thank you, Frank. It's been a pleasure.
Marcia Gordon, Laura Boys, Movies on the Radio. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.